research that resonates.
Schweitzer has not been wrong on any of his years and years of reporting on the Bidens.
Investigations that matter.
If your last name wasn't Biden, do you think you would have been asked to be on the board of Burisma?
I don't know. Probably not. But that's, you know, I don't think that there's a lot of things that would have happened in my life that that if my last name wasn't Biden.
The only entities, the only people that would report on this, and Peter Schweitzer, who deserves a Medal of Freedom, in my view.
This is The Drill Down with Peter Schweitzer.
Hi, this is Peter Schweitzer, and welcome to The Drill Down, where we relentlessly expose cronyism, corruption, and the abuse of power in Washington, D.C. The co-host of this program, of course, Eric Eggers. So, Eric, I'm wondering, in your long and illustrious career as a college undergraduate, did you ever participate in a protest?
Absolutely. I regularly protested a variety of things on college campuses, mostly the class's attendance policies, which is why, for the record, my track record at college was so long.
But there was no grand political protest or anything like that that you participated in.
Actually, it's funny. I mean, no, I didn't. But it's funny that this is a thing that we're talking about now, because Florida State University, where I attended, was at one point in the 60s known as the Berkeley of the South. It has a large tradition of social upheaval and, you know, social justice protests, things like that. And it seems like that's an era that many college campuses are attempting to reclaim right now. Columbia University just canceled their graduation because of the ongoing protests and the disruption those protests have caused for college life in New York. But it's happening elsewhere, but it doesn't quite seem like the same as what happened in the 60s, does it?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. And we're going to talk about that today. We're going to unpack it, I think, in a way that few other people, if anybody, has. And that is looking at who's actually behind these protests. Protests are not spontaneous. They just don't happen organically. They have to be organized. They have to be structured. They have to be directed and steered. And we're going to talk about who's doing that today and some very interesting ties overseas. We're going to talk about what the Chinese assessment of this is, using their own words. And we're going to unpack who's actually funding this movement, because I think you're exactly right. In the 60s, it was more spontaneous. Part of it was you didn't have cell phones, you didn't have social media. So, you know, things kind of moved slowly and then developed. Now it seems to happen instantaneously, and it's very, very organized. The tents all look the same. The placards that people are carrying all look the same. The messaging from spokesperson from campus to campus, whether you're at UCLA or NYU, happens to be the same. And it's all because it is a deeply organized process, and it includes some very interesting foreign elements.
Even New York City Mayor Eric Adams, who is no conservative, has said that he's defended, I guess, the performance of his city and said, look, these are outside elements that are causing these things to happen. Columbia's at the forefront, but these things are happening on campuses all over the place. There was a really interesting article in Politico where they kind of looked into, and there's been reporting by the New York Post and others about the funding connections between George Soros-backed groups and these college campuses. And I think that that's a real thing. We're going to talk about that briefly, but talk about, I think, a different type of funding source. But in the article about, hey, you know, we're the Soros, the Biden administration, or the Biden campaign has some donors who are actually funding some of these groups that are funding the protests. And like, well, is this going to matter in November? Well, and they'll say, well, no, because elections aren't dependent on foreign policy issues. And so they're framing what's happening with these college campus protests as a foreign policy issue. But I think the organization is so large and the impact on domestic life has become now so great. If you've got college campuses, think about this. If college graduation ceremonies are being canceled, it's the same group whose high school graduation canceled because of COVID, right?
That's right.
I mean, different thing 4 years later, but that's no longer a foreign policy issue. That's a, hey, it's impacting my family's experience issue, which is why I think it is going to matter politically.
Yeah. And this movement is designed to disrupt. It's not a ceasefire movement. The protesters are not calling for a ceasefire, give peace a chance kind of stuff from the 60s. I mean, they're actually endorsing intifada against Israel.
On American college campuses.
On American college campuses. They're in people's face and they're being disruptive. And by the way, certain foreign powers are watching this and enjoying it. So let's talk first about the foreign component of this. Then we're going to talk about sort of the divide within the Democratic Party, because there are some very interesting links here who domestically is funding this movement, who also happen to be Joe Biden supporters. And of course, Biden is facing a lot of the blowback here. But let's start overseas, and let's start particularly with China.
Okay. You want to talk about China. I am shocked.
Yeah, shocked. Exactly. Blood Money Pete here wants to talk about China.
Blood Money Pete.
And we ran across this very interesting article.
Pusher Pete.
Maybe I should try to sell Blood Money books at these protests. You think that would go over well? Might get some of the PSL members to buy them. But in all seriousness, there was an article published on April 28th in China, a publication in China called The Paper.
Yep.
That's the English translation. It is run by the Shanghai United Media Group, which is a state government-run media outlet. And it's written by a guy named Lu Fuyang, who is went to Columbia University. College student who's now working for this government-backed newspaper. It's called History Knows Which Way the Wind Blows, starting with the Occupy movement at Columbia University. And this is a glowing account of how courageous and how forthright these students are at Columbia and how we need to cheer them on. And he gives kind of a historical account of what is happening there. But it's very interesting because at the beginning of the article, he kind of offers a warning because, of course, this is going to Chinese students. You want to read that warning for us and tell us what it says?
Well, and I think that it's important to point out why there's a warning there. It says it must be emphasized this article does not intend to encourage any Chinese readers studying and living in the United States to directly participate in political movements. International students who attend school with visas are a vulnerable group, even in a legal sense, and the legal and other protections enjoyed by domestic students are not always extended to foreigners. So step one, Chinese newspaper saying, hey, listen, Chinese students, be careful, because if you do participate in this, if you get arrested, you may have fewer protections than regular students.
And then, but the next line is the one that gets me. Read that next line.
There are many other ways to support what is going on outside of direct participation. Coming forward is a kind of courage worthy of admiration. No matter what, please be sure to carefully understand your rights and possible risks in the host country in advance. You think it's interesting that in China, the default premise of course you would be in support of these protests
exactly
is baked into the article.
Yeah. No, the article doesn't say anything about supporting Israel or about saying this is, and the entire article talks about how these protests are being steered and directed.
Yeah,
by certain forces.
They mentioned that there's lots of different signs that have the same language. They're all affiliated with ANSWER or PSL, even though the protesters don't have any affiliation with them. The strategy of these political factions is to print large number of slogans and brands, distribute them to those people who lack organization, lack materials, which promotes the demonstration and it promotes the groups.
Yeah. To borrow the words of a friend, this is again quoting from the article, it is difficult to say that students acted spontaneously. On the contrary, grassroots organizers have worked hard over the past 10 or even decades, and generations of students have turned themselves into batons, which is a weird translation, of forming a network of various colors. And so the question is, who are the groups that they identify? And one of the groups they identify in this Chinese language article put out by the Chinese state media is the ANSWER Coalition and PSL, which is the Party for Socialism and Liberation, which we talk about in Blood Money. But why it's relevant here is they pop up everywhere at Columbia, at UCLA, at Arizona State University as organizers of these protests. And why do we think that this group is important?
Well, because they're getting money from communist China. And so, and this is actually the connection. You've got the Anti-Defamation League who is saying, look, we're wildly troubled that on 100 college campuses, you've got these PSL-backed protests where they're disrupting activities, disrupting traffic. And the University of Michigan, they're hanging signs that call for the Intifada. I mean, the language, whether intentional or not, becomes very aggressive towards Israel and Israelis who you can understand are a little sensitive about such language. And so they're like, this is not an okay thing. And these groups are like, no, we're supporting the Palestinian people, free Palestine. And so why do you think it's relevant that Chinese money is going to support groups that are organizing anti-Israeli protests on campus?
Yeah, this is what I think is really important. And that is that PSL is basically a proxy for the Chinese CCP. The Party for Socialism and Liberation has pledged their support to China openly and publicly. The leader has said, we are here to offer a militant political defense of China. We know that their leaders have communicated, and we also know that China actually tracks the activities of PSL. We talk about this in Blood Money, and we know that there is this support that's taking place. So this is an organization, a radical organization, that is doing the bidding of China in the United States. And by the way, they are everywhere. These are just a couple of headlines. We're not going to go through all of them. A couple of headlines of what PSL is doing. As you pointed out, the Anti-Defamation League has identified them as pushing for college encampments across the country. They organized protests at the University of Georgia. They were involved in setting up the encampment at Stanford University, at Washington University in St. Louis. PSL organized an encampment. 100 people were arrested there. Arizona State University, another encampment. 69 students were there. It was PSL that set it up at Case Western Reserve in Ohio. The list goes on and on and on. The point is that PSL is omnipresent in a lot of these radical entities. China is aligned with them, and the Chinese official media is basically crediting them with pushing a lot of these protests.
And I hate to give Peter Schweizer more credit because, look, the man's basically responsible for the fact that your daughter's not going to be on TikTok anymore. You know, so bad time Pete is another term. Be an active parent because of Peter Schweizer. But the point is, in Blood Money, we've talked about the fact that, hey, China's got a lot of different things happening that impact different aspects of American society. TikTok's one of them, and now you're seeing action taken by Congress. But 4 years ago, we also saw this same playbook manifested on behalf of China during the summer of the protests of George Floyd. We talked about the Chinese consulate in Houston, which was evacuated, and they burned all the documents so no one would know exactly what China was up to. And we know the fact that China had to delete 170,000 accounts right, that were linked to China, mostly because they were tweeting during Chinese business hours,
right,
but social media accounts that were attempting to essentially foment violence, foment social unrest, foment the protest, encourage the protest that was happening. And if you think about it, social media is actually the common campus, if you like, for all the protesters, because it's one thing to hold a sign on a campus at some university across the country, but then that gets amplified and celebrated in the community of social media, which we know China's a big player in.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. It magnifies it. It makes it more disruptive. And as you point out, I think it's a really important point, is it's not as if PSL has been focused just on this issue.
Right.
4 years ago, also an election year in 2020, they were at the forefront of a lot of the Black Lives Matter protests. Same kind of thing. So they're almost like a rent-a-riot, right? They're pro-Chinese. They get mad about something and they decide they are going to shut things down. And then you've got media platforms like TikTok, but then you've also got Chinese bots operating on other platforms like Twitter or X that are magnifying this message. Why do they want to do this? Because it divides the country. And as one Chinese military official puts it, it saps America of its strength. We're fighting each other. There's all the social turmoil. We can't do the things that we need to do to be strong as a country because we're divided.
And no, by the way, it's not just the alignment of groups like PSL that we know are behind all the college or many of the protests on college campuses across the country. But China has made U.S. universities a clear target of its initiatives for some time. In 2019, under the Trump administration, Betsy DeVos and the Department of Education, they issued this big report. They had a lot of different findings about foreign money that was going into U.S. universities. They included a discussion of a U.S. Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations that did a bipartisan report on the Chinese Communist Party's propaganda operations on U.S. campuses. It found that Chinese investments in U.S. higher education industries are a black hole because 70% of all the universities don't comply with releasing how much money they're getting from foreign sources. Much of it comes to China. We do know, though, think about this. Since 2012, so last 12 years, what they have reported, and they don't report a lot of it, but what they have reported, anonymous donations from China, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Russia, over $1 billion. So, you got Mideastern influences with Qatar and Saudi Arabia. So, I wonder which side they'll take on the whole Israeli-Palestine situation. You got Russia and China, who we know are actively trying to destabilize American society.
Right.
And they're actively investing to the tune of over $1 billion in college campuses, which is exactly where this is happening now, just as it was 4 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, we're all about follow the money in politics.
Absolutely.
A lot of people get that and understand it. That's American journalism. What about follow the money in higher education?
Mm-hmm.
The notion that these foreign entities are sending all these money to the campuses and there are no strings attached. Qatar, which is a big donor to U.S. campuses, that's where Hamas is headquartered.
Oops.
This terrorist organization is actually headquartered in Qatar, and they're making these large donations. And you're exactly right. According to the 1965 U.S. Education Act, they are required by law to disclose foreign donations that they received. And they fail to do it, or they obscure it and they hide it. So, for example, if you're a Chinese billionaire close to the CCP and you set up a offshore entity in Guernsey, for example, which
like,
is a,
like Joe Tsai, for example, somebody like that, maybe an owner of an NBA team. I don't know.
Exactly. Co-founder of Alibaba.
Yeah.
He's a huge donor to Yale. So he sets up an offshore account in Guernsey. He donates from that account to Yale University. And guess what? Yale lists it as a donation from Guernsey, not a donation from China.
And by the way, Joe Tsai, I mean, just to kind of link what happened 4 years ago to what's happening now, Joe Tsai was essentially one of the guys who helped launch the Black Lives Matter movement with donations to that organization as well.
Yeah, that's right. And it has been outspoken on these issues in the United States.
But not in China.
In China, not so much.
I think that's actually one of the better points you make, because you talk about Roy Singham, who's been one of the people who's funded a lot of the trans movement and other elements that have proven to be quite controversial in U.S. And they're outspoken in investing in groups to help make these issues elevated in the United States. But they don't do it in China because you're not allowed to do that in China.
Right, right.
And, also, there's also maybe recognition that it's not good for the society of China.
Yeah, yeah. They're pro-CCP. And the CCP has taken the position that they don't even want effeminate men on national television because they think it reduces the virility of Chinese society. And they don't seem to have any problem with that. So it's a huge problem of this foreign outside influence that is organizing these protests in a very deliberate way. And that's the thing that I think that we can't emphasize enough. This is not like the early stages in 2020 of Black Lives Matter, where people were kind of showing up and they were milling around and they were having peaceful protests. These are focused protests, sit-ins that are designed to provoke. They're highly organized. They involve elements that are being supported by foreign powers. And that, I think, is a huge problem. But there's also a domestic side of the coin here as well, right? And a really, I think, interesting divide within the Democratic Party when it comes to these protest movements.
Yeah, I remembered when, you know, reading about the people that are Biden supporters and the fact that they happen to be also supporting groups that are behind these protests. It reminded me of something that we read last summer in an article about Barack Obama, but just to kind of put a little bit of meat on the bone as it relates to these groups. So pro-Palestinian protesters are backed by a foundation that gets funded by the Pritzkers, for example, who we know, Penny Pritzker is now in charge of the rebuild in Ukraine. So it's funny, you know, there's this new Macklemore rap video out now where he's like, tries to make the point, oh, you know, Ukraine can defend itself, but Palestine cannot.
Yeah. And just to be clear, Penny Pritzker is helping blow up Chicago with these groups, but she's rebuilding Ukraine. Right. I mean, it's kind of a weird dichotomy.
There's the Rockefellers. The Rockefellers have given $300,000 to the Tides Foundation. So the Soros linked groups are collecting money from Biden supporters. And then a lot of that money ends up finding its way to groups like Jewish Voice for Peace, which explicitly describes itself as anti-Zionist, which has received $500,000 from the Tides Foundation over the last 5 years. So those types of things exist. Right.
Yeah.
And that's a weird look for Joe Biden. You're also seeing more vocal opposition to Joe Biden emerge on behalf of these college campuses, which just reminded me of this weird dynamic within the current Democratic Party and the Democratic political coalition, which they say Joe Biden's trying to get young people and the Obama people. And then it reminded me of this article that an interview with a biographer, David Garrow, who wrote a big, long book about Barack Obama. And the article starts with...
And just to be clear, Garrow loves Barack Obama. He's politically liberal. He's a historian. But this is not some crazy right-winger that's attacking Barack Obama.
No, it speaks to a lot of different things, including the lack of curiosity about Barack Obama, And so do we not really understand who he was or how he came to be? But the article starts with this interview Garrow did with this girl who broke up with Barack Obama. And she's like, well, we're in Chicago. It's a white woman. We were dating. And we went to this exhibit on a Nazi trial of this guy, Adolf Eichmann, who was behind much of the Holocaust. And at the same time, in the late 80s, there was a mayoral aide in Chicago, Steve Coakley, who was giving these lectures inferring that Jewish doctors were infecting black babies with AIDS. So yeah. There was this, you know, if you're a white Jewish person, you take a lot of offense to that.
Rightfully so.
And in the article, it talks about why Obama broke up with his girlfriend at the time. It says it was not Obama's blackness that bothered her, but that he would not condemn anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
And so it's just interesting to think of, you know, 30 years ago, there was this dynamic where there's a certain element of a progressive, radical, let's call it black politics, that identifies more with a certain faction at the expense of being seen as anti-Semitic. And I think on some level, there's a progressive element that is okay with being seen as anti-Semitic. And that's kind of what's happening on campus now.
Yeah. I mean, remember Jesse Jackson? Jesse Jackson once referred to New York as Heimy Town.
I thought that was Eddie Murphy on Saturday Night Live.
No, that was Eddie Murphy pretending he was Jesse Jackson.
It's a great song, Heimy Town.
but you know, that shows that divide. And there's a certain irony here, because if you look at the history of the civil rights movement in America, the first Americans in the white community that really embraced the civil rights movement were largely Jewish Americans. So there's this history of long support for civil rights for the black community. And yet a lot of black leaders, for some reason, have been really shy about criticizing anti-Semitism, as in the case of Barack Obama or Jesse Jackson and others expressing these views. So the question is, we've got these foreign sources that are supporting this tumult. You've got these domestic allies that Biden are supporting it. What do you think the play is here for the Biden administration? Is this severely damaging, or is there a way out? Because I think there's actually a way out, a way in which this can help Joe Biden if he plays it right.
I don't see it as damaging. On some level, you would think it should be, but then you would have thought that the summer of 2020 should have been also, with all the destruction of property. And a lot of people thought, well, if Trump's the law and order guy and people are on the side of law and order, yet we're allowing this to happen. But it didn't seem to negatively impact Donald Trump, because even states like Minnesota that were ground zero for a lot of these things, in Minneapolis, they still went for Joe Biden. So it didn't seem to have the political reward for the people in opposition to the protests, right, as you would have thought they would.
Yeah. No, I think that's exactly right. I think that's a fair point. I think that if Biden plays this right, he can play it to his advantage. And here's why. He has really done very little to support Israel overtly. He said some nice things, and of course, military aid, but he knows that he can't, you know, cut off aid or really throw the hammer at Israel because of criticism within his party. But with these crazy protests going on, for him to simply denounce the protests forcefully, it makes him look strong when he's actually not doing anything. Right. It's kind of false theater. And I think that's what you're going to see. I think you're going to continue to see these protests, because, by the way, I don't think these protesters are controlled by George Soros or by these domestic allies of Joe Biden's. I think they are radical left. I think that people like George Soros felt that they could co-opt them or moderate them or bring them into the larger fold. But these are people that fundamentally are aligned with foreign powers.
No, I think that's right. I think to say that the Soros groups are funding these protests is correct in a sense. I think they're funding the organization of them. Right. But I think these people already existed. You might have bought them an Amazon tent, but you didn't give them a new ideology. This ideology has been present, and you're just giving them an excuse to kind of go out, and it's a movement to be identified with. No, I think that's correct. I also think that on some level, anything that energizes and excites people is good for the party that those people being excited would generally tend to support. Yeah. And so I think you can't, yes, they're saying there's some anti-Biden stuff happening in some of the discourse, but at the same time, let's just not forget, you're getting people engaged, you're getting people energized and activated on college campuses at the same time when the Biden administration is using the Department of Education and basically threatening to take away money if the Department of Education and these universities don't actively register new voters. So I actually think that they see it as a voter pool. Let's get them activated. Let's get them engaged. They're politically active. And now we just have to convert them.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out. What is clear is that Eric Adams has condemned the fact that outsiders are coming in and stirring the pot. You have not heard that from the Biden administration itself. And of course, they're responsible for national security. And this is a national security issue with foreign meddling in the United States. They have not denounced it. And I don't think they are going to denounce it, because one thing we know about Joe Biden is he's not going to really confront China. And I think a lot of his political allies that are supporting it have made the same mistake that these university presidents are making. And they think that, you know, these radicals are just kind of misunderstood, sort of, you know, hyperactive liberals, right? They're just good natured people. And if we just, you know, if we just kind of pat them on the head and grant them some wisdom and some insight, they'll become more like us. They're not. These are hardened core radicals, and they are exciting young people by bringing them into a movement that they think is going to be transformative in somewhere. And they're turning it into this sort of social circus, to your point, that generates a lot of energy and curiosity. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. I'm not as convinced that this is some big vulnerability for Joe Biden the way that a lot of people are playing it.
Well, certainly if what we do is follow the money, then the money's on the side of the protesters.
Yes.
You know, for Joe Biden, and to the extent that even Joe Biden has financial ties with China, you should actually look into that. I think that's a real thing.
I'll make a note of that.
And China's supporting these protests as well. So it does seem to be, I wouldn't expect him to come out and do any condemnations of the protests anytime soon because of all those financial ties.
Yeah. Well, we know now that Eric Eggers did not create an encampment when he was an undergraduate in college, although that would have been quite fun to see. I would have been interested to see how you would have decorated that encampment and what the theme would have been.
My tenure as an undergraduate student was so long, it basically qualifies as an encampment. Just the one degree, though. Just the one.
So we know you didn't protest. We know there's a lot of activity on campus, and we're going to continue to follow this. And we're going to continue to do what we always do, which is follow the money. Look at the forces behind these activities, who's actually organizing these protests, directing them, and who they are being potentially steered by. So we appreciate you taking the time, as always, to listen to this podcast. You can find my book, Blood Money, at bookstores everywhere. You can find out more about the research we do at thedrilldown.com. And of course, this podcast is available wherever fine podcasts are located. Thanks again for listening. Until next time.